It seems we only hear about it in passing, but we keep hearing about it. The Arctic is changing and the implications are huge. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Alaska is the only Arctic state and its delegation to the U.S. Congress is just three people. But agencies are beginning to take notice, particularly the Coast Guard, and some urgency is beginning to percolate through the policy apparatus. Our number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage, 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. It's your shot to speculate about the future of the Arctic today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, so the delegation is definitely stepping up the pressure. Just in the past month, while I've been away, there are statements from each of the three members of the delegation and actions with regard to getting something done about being more prepared in the Arctic. Alaska, as I said, is the only Arctic state. We got three people in Congress. So what have they been doing? Well, Senator Mark Begich has been appointed as a subcommittee chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee. He's on the Oceans Subcommittee, so this actually gives him a position, a policy position on this. So what happened with him was last week, a little bit more than a week ago, he was in Seattle. He went to the shipyard and he took a look at both the Kulik, which is Shell Oil's offshore vessel for the Chukchi Beaufort Sea, and the icebreaker Polar Star, which is being refitted but not active yet. And so he's just pointing out and underscoring that we need a little bit more icebreaker capacity. Senator Lisa Murkowski was a bit more blunt with the situation at a hearing where she said our icebreaking capacity as an Arctic nation is unacceptable. This was at a hearing. She talked to the Vice Admiral of the U.S. Coast Guard, Brian Salerno. The Coast Guard is well aware. They just have never had the money appropriated for more icebreakers. There is exactly one functioning icebreaker. It's a smaller one. Well, lighter duty is what they call it. It's not physically smaller than the others, but it's not as heavily built. It's called the Healy, and it does mostly scientific duty, which these days consists basically of madly scrambling to map the continental shelf off the Arctic coast. And the reason for this is that that's the basis for territorial assertions under the Law of the Sea Treaty. But then again, the United States has still not ratified the Law of the Sea Treaty. But they're preparing for whenever the Senate finally decides to move on this. The United States is the only nation that has not ratified the Law of the Sea Treaty. This has been going on since the 1970s. It's one of the reasons the Magnuson Act was passed, because we didn't have jurisdiction past, well, I think, 6 or 7 miles. So to get an OCS area, to get fisheries jurisdiction out beyond that, we needed to pass some kind of act of Congress. But we couldn't get the Law of the Sea Treaty ratified through Congress. People said it was bowing to international law and things like that. And so basically they passed the Magnuson Act, which then became the Magnuson-Stevens Act. All this stuff is enormously important for Alaska. But sometimes just a drop of the bucket in terms of the noise level of national and international politics. But increasingly, the Arctic is important in international politics. Yeah, so we talked about Mark Begich going to look at the progress on the Polar Star, which has not been refitted yet, so isn't ready to go yet. And we talked about Lisa Murkowski at a hearing last month, basically pointing out that Russia has 8 heavy icebreakers, 12 medium, and 13 light, a total of 33. Canada has 2 medium and 4 light, a total of six, and the United States has one. One. And it comes up in the news now that China is building a giant icebreaker. Now, why do you suppose that would be? We'll get to that a bit later on as the show continues. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call of 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. You are welcome to call and join in a conversation about the situation in the Arctic and what can Alaska do. I think this really is the question. What can Alaskans do to begin to get some policy movement on the Arctic? Why does this all of a sudden get urgent? Basically because the climate is warming. Whether you want to be in denial about that or not, the sea ice is withdrawing in the wintertime. And the result is, with thinner sea ice, that shipping becomes more practical across the Arctic. This past season, Russia sent a gas tanker through the ice, and it took 6 days to get across Asia. Going Asia to Europe, Europe to Asia in 6 days. I mean, that's like, that cuts the time more than in half for shipping. Now, most things that ship, if they go between Europe and Asia, have to go through the Bering Strait. We have jurisdiction until it hits Russian jurisdiction at the Bering Strait. And the reality is that we also have a treaty with Russia that is pretty strong and firm about whose territory is where and stuff like that. So with some cooperation from the Russians, theoretically, we could be in a good position for regulation of shipping that comes through there, except that nothing really is happening on that. You know, people in the policy sector are talking about it, but in terms of things happening, we don't have things happening. And so shipping is slowly increasing. Now, it is true, you know, I look at the surveys, like where is the real traffic coming from? A lot of it is research vessels. And then we've got the oil business is starting to go back and forth to the Chukchi, and some of the research is related to that as well, it should be mentioned. But there are increasing numbers of vessels going across on the Russian side as well through the Bering Strait. And so, you know, it's increasing. And who's regulating them? How clean are they? Even this minute, how clean are they? And what kind of spill safeguard and protections are there up there? And the answer is really hardly any. I'm just looking at my prompter here and realize it's turned off. Okay, well, I believe one of our guests is with us by phone, and I'm so glad to have her join us from our office in Washington, D.C., Senator Lisa Murkowski. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Good to be with you for just a few moments. How are things?
Well, things are really good. Essentially, I was just talking about your recent hearing where you took the you basically raked the vice admiral over the coals, but the reality is that the Coast Guard is quite aware that they're not prepared for any kind of response, search and rescue, or so forth in the Arctic, and they're madly going through the options for doing that, and I assume you're supporting every bit of that.
Well, we are, and our reality, of course, is up against budget issues that make it very, very problematic. We ask our Coast Guard to do an incredible amount, and the resources that we give them have been limited in the past, and unfortunately, they're not looking much brighter. But as I have stated to anybody who's within earshot, and the Coast Guard will concur, we've got responsibilities as an Arctic nation. And budget issues, yes, certainly face us. But we have got to be in a position to be more responsive to an evolving role in the Arctic. So whether it is icebreakers, whether it is ports, deep water ports, whether it is infrastructure to provide for better search and rescue efforts, there's a responsibility that we have in the Arctic, and we've got to figure out how we're going to meet that.
Do you think that it will be possible to get them the resources they need for at least their deep water port assessment? I mean, they got to figure out what to do about having more up. You know, right now, Dutch Harbor is kind of far.
Yeah. Well, in fact, the assessment and the effort to better understand the needs, that is moving forward. But it's one thing to have the assessment done, to have the study and know what it is that we need, and another thing to fund it. So there is a great deal that needs to happen. I think the Coast Guard, above all, recognizes the need and is trying to work to prioritize their requirements, and we're working with them. It's a tough measure, but it's critically important.
Senator, I know you only have a few minutes, but if I can, I'd really like to get another issue out, and that is today's announcement about the five-year schedule for OCS leasing. The Obama administration kind of tried to cut some middle ground here with the environmentalists, who didn't want any more oil and gas leasing in the Arctic, and said, well, we'll just put it later in the schedule. I just wondered your reaction to that.
Well, as I mentioned, I think it is important. I think it is a positive sign that the administration has advanced these lease sales, including one in the Beaufort and up in the Chukchi. This is a positive sign. But it's one thing to allow for the lease sales to proceed. It's another thing then to deal with the permitting. As we all know in Alaska, Shell was successful in the leases several years back, but it's been 5 years through a permitting process that is still stalled out.
So whoops.
It's not just about making sure that the leases are made available. It's making sure that the permits can proceed.
So it's just something that has to be watched, I guess, because clearly all parties want caution here.
All parties want caution. I think if from the perspective of those that are in a position to proceed with development, what they're hoping for is a little bit of certainty. They expect that there will be high standards, but I think they also anticipate that there will be a reasonable time process within which they're expected to be operating. And what Shell has seen is many billions of dollars, and many years later, with still no resolve. So, yes, we expect a level of safety that goes above and beyond, but I would hope that we can do a little bit better with the process and the timelines that we've seen to this point.
It seems that Shell really took some unprecedented steps in terms of environmental protection. Part of this, you know, it depends on which side you listen to, but I don't think anybody can argue that Shell isn't doing more than other oil companies have in terms of providing some capacity up there that the Coast Guard is unable to provide. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before.
I think it is unprecedented. I think the Coast Guard recognizes that it's unprecedented, and Shell knows that they don't have any other options. As you and I have just been discussing, you simply don't have the infrastructure that's built in that you would see, for instance, in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not in place in Alaska. So Shell has got to provide for a level of response and capacity that is unprecedented. And what they are building, what they are setting in place, is exactly that. It's going to be a considerable effort by Shell. I think they recognize that the role of the Coast Guard, as important as it is in all of our waters, they won't be able to rely on the Coast Guard as operators in other parts of our offshore waters can. And so they have to be somewhat independent in what it is that they're building out. It is unprecedented.
Senator Murkowski, I want to thank you for being with us. I also just wanted to note that I'm happy to see that you've been beefing up your staff in some areas, including Arctic Affairs. I mean, it just seems that there's just no end to the amount of work that needs to be done from the office of three people down there. It's just mind-boggling.
It is, and it's an important role. As I like to, they think I'm teasing. I'm dead serious. They say, well, you talk about us being an Arctic nation. It's just that Alaska. Well, yeah, it is that Alaska. We're one of the 50 states here. We are an Arctic nation, and everybody else in the rest of the country needs to know and understand what that means for us. We've got some incredible opportunities. They present some interesting challenges. I think we're up to it.
I'm asking Alaskans to respond with what they think Alaskans could do. Is there anything you'd like to toss in that maybe there could be more support, maybe from the state government or from Alaskans themselves?
Well, I think so much of this is just an ongoing education. As Alaskans, we can speak to people when we're traveling around the country. We've got a lot of great young Alaskan ambassadors that come back here to Washington, D.C. In fact, I'm walking into a room of about 100 young people that are back here on different school programs. And I'm going to ask them, as they are here in Washington, D.C., meeting with other young people, tell Alaska's story. Explain what some of our issues are and what our stepped-up role in the Arctic needs to be. I think there is something that each and every one of us can do, and it really starts with an honest educational process.
Well, I hope
we can all be helping there.
I hope you find this encouraging, meeting with the young people, Senator. Thank you.
I always do. Yeah. Thank you for the time this afternoon and for bringing up this very important issue.
All right. Thanks for your call. Senator Lisa Murkowski on Talk of Alaska, live from Washington, D.C., as she carries her cell phone into a meeting with a bunch of young people. And, you know, some of the guests that I saw for this program, everybody's busy. The big Arctic shipping expert is on an airplane right now. The head of the Institute of the North is also meeting with young people. Niels Andreasen is actually in an elementary school classroom today, or he said he'd love to do it. And it goes on. So it's really kind of up to you from this point on. What do you think Alaskans should do to get some policy movement on the Arctic? And what should that policy movement be? I mean, clearly there's people that say there shouldn't be any oil and gas drilling in the Arctic Ocean, period. And then there's people who say, well, we need search and rescue. The Coast Guard is moving ahead on search and rescue, but just think at all the things that could happen. And then there's looking a little further ahead. What about tourism? What about when they discover, as they already know, that the ice in the North Pole is actually thinner? You get to the middle of the Arctic Ocean, the ice can actually be thinner than it is along parts of the coast, especially what they call the Northwest Passage through Canada. And you think, well, who's really, at what point is somebody just going to pioneer a shipping line, you know, that's going to cut, 12, 14 days off of shipping between Europe and Asia and just goes through the Bering Straits and right across the center of the Arctic Ocean? And should they do that, what kind of regulation is there in place presently outside of law of the sea, which the United States hasn't even ratified, but even beyond that? And you can say the same thing about fisheries. Just like we had endless problems with drift nets and bandit fisheries, if you were around for it, you know, in the donut hole between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, basically you got this area where the 200-mile limits don't quite cover of either country, so there's this one spot in the middle, and that's where all the nasty stuff was happening, including interception of young salmon, on and on and on. Well, you think that's a donut hole? Take a look at the one in the Arctic Ocean. If there are commercially fishable species of fish up there, that's why China wants that icebreaker along with the oil and gas up there. China's in a position to make mega investments. And, you know, all this bears watching. And all the people that are watching it are busy, are overbooked. It's going to take us to 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. Yeah, that's right. Heimel is beating the drum over the Arctic yet again. Let's go to Greg. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Greg.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. Well, a couple of issues had rolled through my head since I originally thought about what I wanted to ask you about, but true to my my first inclination, I'll go ahead with my first thought. And you kind of touched on that with the senator, and that was, you know, the public's perception of the thinning of the Arctic ice and the old basic education that the general public has about really where it's thinning, when it's thinning, how it affects, and why U.S. federal or state dollars should go to exploring and or providing more icebreakers up there, which is, you know, that's a big topic and a lot of variables to think about. But as I was sitting here, I added to that concoction the thought of detente and the way our government and our state works with our nation neighbors and this delicate little ballet dance that we have with them. And as far as, okay, well, let's see, we need to be friends with them right now because of this reason and that reason, and maybe it's security-based or whatever, and they may back off on issues that might offend and or provoke some of our nation neighbors. I don't think Canada's really ever an issue, but...
Canada is an issue, pal.
Well,
Canada's an issue. We have a colossal offshore border dispute that starts right at the border with in the Arctic Ocean there. Colossal.
Well, that proves a case in point that there are a lot of other sublying issues that
except Canada, which you know has far less money than the U.S. Treasury, is seeing fit to invest like crazy in icebreakers.
Well, they see a value, obviously, and perhaps we're backing off on that too for whoever, whatever reasons. I'm not sure. And where you were saying, a lot of our officials are very busy right now. And there's a lot of this election thing that's happening that's tainting our perception and our view of what we should be doing and thinking about and spending our money on.
You've got that right. And, you know, Senator Murkowski was saying that in so many words. He says, hey, don't expect too much money out of this Congress here.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. We're bottlenecked in Congress and in the Senate. And, you know, and it's all politically based. And I think a lot of that is spurred on by what the public will tell their politicians what they want. And, of course, that's all highly controlled from various standpoints as to what the public is fed and or is capable of understanding.
Yeah. Social media, in my humble opinion, is easing it a little bit because people are better able to organize and coalesce in unpredictable ways now.
Unpredictable is right. I think that
it's very unpredictable, let's say chaotic. But the thing is that it actually, a lot of the data is available because the people who have the biggest concern here pretty much all know each other. They pretty much get along whether they are Russians or Americans or Canadians or Norwegians or Finnish.
Chinese.
Yeah. They pretty much get along. Koreans, they pretty much get along. And they pretty much know each other, and they're always going to these conferences about the urgency of the Arctic, you know. I mean, there's one every few weeks now. But the thing is, they mostly believe in public availability of data. So if you go to, like, the National Snow and Ice Data Center, you can get fantastic mapping of the Arctic sea ice, which isn't at all hard to deconstruct and interpret it, and you can see for yourself. I mean, what you started with, you said, well, the public needs to be educated about how the sea ice stuff really happens. Fact of the matter is, it's all there. It's just a question of it's never reinforced, it's never interpreted, except by the agency.
Well, you have to take in consideration what's a priority for the public. You know, a lot of us are really just trying to make our house payments and put food on the table, and the last thing we think about is, you know, larger global issues like that. And, you know, I think sometimes those thoughts are, to an advantage for a lot of the politicians and or the government folks that are basically not wanting to jump into too many big hot kettles of oil all at the same time, you know, handle one fire at a time, in other words.
Greg, you got a lot of insight. I want to thank you for your call.
Well, I appreciate you letting me blab on about it. Thank you.
Oh, you're our experts today. Thank you so much, Greg in Anchorage, and now for Anchor Point. And Patrick, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Patrick.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you to public radio and Senator Murkowski. Hopefully, finding continued support for public radio. We appreciate the live.
I'll stop with that stuff.
Okay. Well, anyway, the reason for the call primarily was thinking of thinning ice, and I just hope that that there's some thought being given to this. But anybody that watches their driveway or dog sled or snow machine trail break up in April knows how much the albedo effect, how much the reflection of snow compared to solar absorption of a dark surface matters.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if we start chopping up the sea ice. Now, granted, I'm in favor of polar exploration, and I don't think America should be behind there. However, I just hope that somebody smarter than me is looking into the possibility that cutting trails through that white ice is going to exacerbate melting. And if I can guess with a bit of a scientific mind here that everything we see about global warming so far, it's happening faster because effects are cumulative and so on. And so that's almost a question there, more than a, I don't mean to sound Chicken Little on you there. But basically,
well, Patrick, you kind of came to the right place. The first thing is there's very little that I know of that actually quantifies, you know, like for a long time, people would absolutely sneer at the idea that the vapor trail of a jet plane in the sky would have any effect on anything, right?
Right.
But
right.
Now they realize that, well, it actually does.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a slow dawning of how a butterfly in China, you know, can cause a hurricane someplace else. But the fact of the matter is that sometimes it's small things add up. And there has been some effort to quantify it, but I don't know any kind of results on that.
Sure.
And
sure.
Then, but the other thing about it is that this albedo, it really worries me.
Yeah.
The big one for people in the scientific, you see it in your driveway, you see it anywhere, but people in the scientific community, I've been asking them about this for 10 years.
Yeah.
And they have always said, no, we put this in our models. It's in there.
Okay.
But then they have their critics, right, say, yeah, you put it in your models, but you're so scared of being called Chicken Little that you have underestimated it. And guess
well,
what? In every case, they have underestimated the albedo impacts and all the other feedbacks. There's a whole bunch of them, just like, shrubs moving north is one of them, and that's an albedo impact.
Wow.
Every single one of them they have underestimated or don't have their models down to small enough scale that it's even considered. And so that's when I finally get to the bottom line with these people, that's what I get.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm glad you're struggling for the bottom line, and hopefully the more common folk like myself that can think of these things, then maybe we can make sure science stays objective there and not afraid of being called something because of what they actually find in their people forget that scientists are committed to objectivity, right? They don't have an agenda. They're trying to discover. They're not trying to. But anyway,
they are.
I might touch on a couple other subjects that you brought up here in the program, which is excellent. As far as commercial oil and gas in the Arctic, you know, I like a full oil tank and a full gas tank as much as anybody, and I just would be willing to, I don't want to quite say pay more, but ensure, look at Norway as a model. I would like to ensure that when we do extract the oil and gas from the most critical places and the most difficult places, I'm willing to pay a safety premium there and at the sacrifice of profit, you know.
Okay.
And I would hope that we can all get on that page.
Okay, that's one. What's the other one?
The other one is in terms of commercial fisheries opening up under the ice. I've been reading a book called The Unnatural History of the Sea by Robert Callum, and it talks about how fishery after fishery is initially overexploited. And with a little bit of foresight, because I'm sure there will be fish under the Arctic ice, of course. It's dark. It's going to be full of oxygen. There's going to be fish to be had. And
there's a heck of a food chain that just drops off of the bottom of the ice.
Sure.
Yeah.
We've got the technology with deep water trawling. All this stuff is there. And certainly China has the appetite, so to speak. But the critical thing would be to anticipate it and try to get out ahead with some marine preserves to allow brooding stock and areas that aren't trawled, aren't fished, so that it has a crack at being sustainable.
Very good. I think MPAs, which is known as ocean zoning right now,
sure.
I can't think of another alternative. Maybe some of our listeners can.
Yeah.
Thank you, Patrick.
Well, I appreciate the program, and I hope you enjoy the day, too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. I am enjoying the day, even enjoying the snow after a month in the Mediterranean. And talk about a place that needs more MPAs. You wouldn't believe a little teeny-weeny fish that these fishermen, the few remaining fishermen, are bringing in from the Mediterranean these days. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Plenty ahead of you already. Email, however, not a single one. Email is talk@APRN.org as Talk of Alaska on the Arctic continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Alaska Business Monthly, providing a source for statewide in-depth business news on Twitter at AK Business Month or Facebook.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about how Alaskans can have more clout in Arctic policy, being as how we only have three members of our congressional delegation, and so much of it seems to go down to Washington. We had Senator Lisa Murkowski on earlier, and she said, education. Every Alaskan needs to be an ambassador. Well, we got to decide what we're going to be ambassadors about, too. I realized while I was talking about our three members of the congressional delegation, I went at great length into what each of our senators is doing and never mentioned Representative Don Young. The fact of the matter is, Congressman Young has got a bill to try and semi-privatize the icebreaker business, and that also came out during the past month. He introduced the Polar Protection Act, House Bill 3113, and this would authorize the Coast Guard to enter into long-term lease agreements for two new icebreakers, specifically requiring them to enter into each lease within 4 years from enactment of the legislation, requiring them each lease to be at least 10 years long. Now, we already have a problem. I don't even know if they've solved it or what, but getting an icebreaker into the science station at McMurdo Sound in Antarctica, because the Healy's tied up here. I don't know how they've been leasing an icebreaker from another country, I think Sweden, who decided that they needed it. So we didn't have one. The race for the Arctic has begun, and we are getting beaten by the likes of China and Russia, said Young. Too much is at stake up there for us not to act now. With the ice melting and the Arctic region becoming more and more accessible, the potential is enormous for new resource development and transportation opportunities. Leasing icebreakers from foreign countries is simply not cutting it. The United States has the capacity to build, run, and maintain our own fleet of icebreakers, and that is why I've introduced the Polar Protection Act. In these difficult budgetary times, leasing should be considered as an option to relieve stress on annual budgets. My legislation does that while modernizing our icebreaker fleet so we're able to compete with any other country in the world. So that was what Young was up to during the past month. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Arctic and Arctic policy, and it's amazing when you on short notice try to fish up experts on this. They're all over the place, and they're all very, very busy. So we've turned to you. Let's go out west to Anna in New Stoyahuk. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Anna.
Thank you very much. One idea I had was, since they mentioned a few times back in the past about fires out there in Fairbanks, I was wondering if, the company, they should start a company for wood chopping. People that build a wood chopping company. and hire people locally or out from other places. And the ones that are causing the problems and making trouble for other people, you know, fire those ones, like the ones that are, you know, having bad addiction to this or that. That would be one of the way I see it, to help out on oil and gas problem that are spilling. And for oil and gas companies, the people, the person that's driving the scow, the ship, or the plane, just have other people. Because I know there's a lot of people that are good drivers. And up in the North Slope, how some could even drive backwards. There's a lot of ways. I don't know.
Every bit of what you say is common sense, Anna. I mean, it's just common sense seems to be in short supply. But I will say on your first thing about chopping the wood and all that, there are programs now in a number of villages where they are setting up boilers and so forth to burn local wood and run the washateria and power plant and stuff like that.
And companies in other places? What about in Fairbanks? Or how is that? Because I know there's a lot of wood all over.
I understand that they are moving forward with a pellet plant, but that's all I can tell you on that one right now. Thanks for your call, Anna.
Oh, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your years.
Thank you. I love that. Thank you from Anna in New Stoyahuk. Let's go to Cordova and Carl. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Carl.
Yeah, hi, Steve. Good to hear you, and good to hear Senator Murkowski and the other callers. Yeah, I just wanted to mention, since there is this not remote at all possibility of massive development of oil finds in the Arctic, one of the things that we here in Cordova on Prince William Sound have been very grateful for is the Regional Citizens Advisory Committee, which is a committee of citizens and oil company representatives and the Coast Guard, who are working on making sure that the oil industry operates in a safe manner that will prevent oil spills. I think it's probably not premature with all this talk about Arctic development to start considering an international regional citizens advisory committee that will include people from the Soviet Union, the Baltic countries, Canada, and the U.S. to ensure that oil development is carried on in a safe and responsible manner in the Arctic. It would be a shame if like all our regional citizens advisory committees, it took an oil spill to create them, and I hope that's not going to be the case in the Arctic.
Carl, that's a great thought, and I think you might have something in terms of making it international so that it's not just one country carrying the load. Carl, thanks for your call from Cordova. It is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Arctic policy. We have this one from Leon, who says, in my opinion, the crucial issue is the failure of the Senate to pass the Law of the Sea Treaty. That's ratification, actually, but anyway, pretty much the same thing. They have to pass something. I just wish Senators Murkowski and Begich would spend as much energy on this issue as they do on opening ANWR. They need to out the tiny number of ultra-conservative senators that have blocked the full Senate from voting on this issue. And thanks for that, Leon. But all I can really add is that with a little more time, I might have tried to press Senator Murkowski on this a little bit more. I think the light of day might actually not take a whole lot more light of day to get this ratification through. The votes actually might be there, but there doesn't seem to be any movement to bring it towards a vote. And I am not sure what the senator would answer on that, but I have a feeling that part of that the administration is not giving as much push to this as it might. If it wanted to spend a little political coinage, it could probably make it happen. But, you know, as you know, Hillary Clinton's leaving, even if she did have the desire or inclination to try and, you know, be part of a push in that direction. So that's all I really know about that in the law of the sea. Let's go to Herman, joins the program from Aniak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Herman. It's great to hear from you again.
Yeah, good morning. I agree that we have to watch our deep sea fisheries, you know, make sure they don't finish our king salmon. But there's a silver lining behind all this, you know. Global warming, you know, it's not all bad. Long time ago, they say Alaska used to be tropics, and we should be looking at as a way to export a lot of our natural resources and create some jobs in rural Alaska, like you know, those mines, you know, like Pebble Mine. They could ship that ore out and process it somewhere else, and everybody would be happy. And a lot of the timber in Western Alaska, it's over 100 years old, you know, and it's falling over, and to create jobs, you know, but it's not all gloom and doom, you know, the sky is not falling, but I agree the U.S. need to protect what's out there in the ocean, because that's where the food from the rivers come from, but, you know, it's not all gloom and doom. We should do what we can to take advantage of it.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Herman, thank you so much for your advice from Aniak, I think that was a very timely call. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. If calling from Anchorage, you just dial 550-8422. It's a local call. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. And, yeah, Herman has called the show a number of times and often has this sort of insight, and it's a great one. Because if you just look at the shipping aspect, if you look at the down the line, the tourism aspect, there are a number of things that really are economic development potentials. But of course, as I'm sure Herman would agree, and most people who have studied it, the institutional people and so forth, say, well, where's the infrastructure? You know, we got the Dalton Highway. We don't have a railroad link. We have the Dalton Highway. It stops at Dead Horse, and everything after that belongs to the oil and gas industry. We've got no deep water port anywhere around. Kotzebue now is thinking maybe it can do it. Nome is thinking maybe it can do it. It's hard to tell where that's going to end up. The Coast Guard's assessment isn't finished yet, as the senator was telling us. But, yeah, you can't really do that much shipping if you don't have a deep water port. I know a lot of the traffic, well, not a lot, but the significant number of the vessel passages through the Bering Straits are the ore carriers that are already going from the Red Dog Mine. So, you know, it's the infrastructure needs to be put in. The question is, what's the right infrastructure? Where should it go? What's a good thing to talk about? What do you think? Do you think the Prudhoe Bay is the place to locate that port? Is it Barrow? Is it maybe Kotzebue, which would basically, I think, the Ambler mining resources and also some coal fields up there that might be gained accessible if there was a deep water port up there? And you can think of China being hungry for every possible energy resource it can get and willing to deal, willing to go into partnerships, maybe even on some of that infrastructure, if we could agree about what we actually wanted. Well, Sam and Kenny Lake joins the program. Sam, I haven't heard from you in a long time. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, thank you. It's great that you're having this program. And I've been watching things grow here for 60 years. And the meditation that goes on while one watches these things grow, you realize the climate change that is going on. And so, of course, I've been watching our 6 feet of ice break up every year that's out in front of my house, and relate that to how the Arctic Ocean is breaking up. And it doesn't take long to melt off 4 feet of ice when the sun's on it and it begins to break up. So the Arctic Ocean, to me, I have a miniature example of what's going on.
Yeah, apparently also they don't have that many measurements of the temperature of the water underneath the ice to see, you know, what the currents are doing there. But apparently that's also become more of a consideration than it once was.
Yes. Now my idea is that since we don't have, the U.S. is unprepared with icebreakers, and they attempt to release them from Finland, I forget what country that was you mentioned.
I think it was Sweden, but I might have that wrong. I think even Argentina has an icebreaker.
now you really got me off track.
it's my business, man.
As a matter of our Alaska position on this, our permanent fund is invested in various ways in an attempt to make money. Well, the stock market isn't a very good place to invest money nowadays, and it's losing money. We might create the Alaska Navy and build our own icebreakers and lease them to America.
Whoa! Man, I'm loving that. That's the best idea I've heard since football Fanny.
Well, maybe I better stop there.
The Alaska Navy. Sam, thanks for that. You got any more? We lost him. Sam. Sam.
Yes, the breakup of the Arctic. I heard one of the natives men reporting that the icebreakers are just chopping it up and it's melting all the faster.
Yeah.
There isn't much else to say on that, except that these spills happen. Nobody expected it in Prince William Sound. Nobody expected it in the Gulf of Mexico. Nobody expected a hurricane like they had in New Orleans. We have these things happening, and it's only a matter of time. They had off the coast of California on oil spills, and I just don't keep track of them. But I can just about say there's going to be one in the Arctic, and we're totally unprepared.
Yep.
I'll let it go at that, and you can have another caller.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Sam, from Kenny Lake, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
Yes, the frozen, remote Arctic wasteland isn't quite so much so anymore. Where did it start? Well, it was the big whaling boom. There was the gold rush. And then there was the oil rush now, wasn't there? And now, we don't quite know what we're going to get next. It would appear that there's going to be more oil stuff. The Interior Department has just announced a couple of more lease sales. And as you probably know, the last lease sale in the Chukchi Sea, which was, 5 years ago or more, pulled in billions of dollars in bids. So one can only assume that there is considerable interest by the industry in oil and gas. So that's a part of it. But there's also the shipping matter. And there's a question of what infrastructure do we have now? What can we have? And how do we set the priorities? And what's the most prudent spending? Sam, just before the break from Kenny Lake, had a great idea. He said, look, they're looking for icebreakers. How about if we just take some of the permanent fund and build icebreakers and call it the Alaska Navy and lease it out to them? Love that. Let's go to Roy. Joins the program from Barrow. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Roy.
Hey, this is one of the few times I agree with what our senators or our people are in the Capitol are saying, that the federal government, or for that matter, the oil companies, are not ready for what is being going to be done out in the Arctic Ocean. And we don't see any kind of activity other than the summertime where a few ships come through here. But like they stated, nobody's ready. And that's one of the concerns that our people had, is the impact that it will have when they're not ready with anything, really, to stop any catastrophe that will be happening in our ocean. And basically what was noted, that the ownership of the sea. Everybody wants to have a piece of it, but really it was created for a subsistence way of life, and those are the people that will be impacted by it, and really that should be our priority. And the Department of Interior, or tribes to tribes, need to we need to be reassured by the federal government that our way of life that we have lived for centuries will not be impacted. I know that oil activity development, and we've seen the history of that go across the nation with the original people where they were killed off or starved away, or all the animals that they had were killed, like the buffalo. And we see a similar case with the opening up the haul road for more caribou kills, and how it's just impacted, like the village of Anaktuvik Pass, where they hardly got any caribou. So we're being impacted. We're being impacted, and that should be our priority by the federal government, how our people will be impacted and how the ocean will be impacted. And opening it up, and I don't like that idea of bottom fishing. It'll be impacted. It got to be studied first, like we studied the whale, and where we still hunt. We just had a good fall whaling, and we were being blessed by our Creator God who made everything. And those are the things that need to be considered. Thank you.
Roy, I want to thank you so much for stepping forward and calling this statewide public radio call-in show on the issue of the Arctic from the Arctic, speaking of very, very definite and genuine concerns that I think everybody needs to hear. 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. Not much time left. Let's go to Glenn, joins the program from Dillingham. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Glenn.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much.
Yep.
I was listening to the previous speaker there. I think we can do a lot as a state for reenacting our coastal zone management plan. You know, these issues that surround our environment and our course to climate changing up north and everywhere else. That infrastructure that he mentioned with shipping and everything else that would help an economy prosper, we just haven't gotten that far yet. But on the other hand, I was hoping to mention a little on some of our infrastructure as it relates to an economic base out here in Bristol Bay. You know, we look at a lot of things that the legislature could be creating as far as our resources. But I think one thing we've overlooked a lot is creating a law that actually mandates value adding to our resources before we leave, the gas, oil, fish, and logs and such. Those go a long way toward creating not only an economic base, but that infrastructure that's much needed to provide that independence as a state, to where we don't have to look to other areas to provide for some of our resources. But I think, you know, you look at Japan and how they import everything, basically. We export everything. And, you know, I think that's where Alaska legislature needs to look at potentially creating, again, that law that mandates value adding. That in itself will create a lot of infrastructure that I think will be lasting.
You know, every time we have a discussion of the future of the state, this tends to come up. You'll say, well, look, we don't manufacture anything there. They just take the resources out and make money off of them. and you're bringing it up again. I mean, you're saying make it a matter of law. But I want to bring this other thing, the CZM that you were talking about. Are you supporting the voter initiative that they just registered?
Yes, I sure do. You know, if we are the only state without a coastal zone management plan, that should be telling the legislators something. You know, it's just a matter of pulling our priorities together. And, you know, realizing that without a good waterway, and with a good open waterway, such as the, you know, with the Northwest Passage opening up, that allows for shipping, reductions in shipping costs, a lot of those things are often overlooked by the fact that we are getting flooded out in villages up on the Kuskokwim. We have land issues that are land is basically being washed away out here in Bristol Bay. We have a a Corps of Engineers master plan that puts seawalls into place, but, you know, we're 10 years away from that, especially here in Dillingham. And I know several native allotment holders that have just lost 100 feet or more of property.
I've seen some of that out there.
I surely support the coastal zone management plan, and bringing it back.
Yeah. All right. Hey, I want to thank you for the call from Dillingham. Great thinking there, Glenn.
Hey, great. Thank you so much. And keep the value-added processing in mind, because like I mentioned before on another talking show, that a province in Canada, British Columbia, has this same goofy law that prevents any resources from leaving without being value-added. And that has created one heck of an economic base for that little province in Canada.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Glenn. Let's go to Robert, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Robert.
Hi, Steve. What a great discussion this is. And, you know, the one thing that really upsets me is that the Chinese have a flag planted on the ocean bottom.
It's the Russians. It's the Russians.
Russians, excuse me. you know, we're going to end up being behind the eight ball on this if we have nothing to protect this country up there.
Yeah. And well, you know, were you the one that, when we brought this up before, somebody called up and said, hey, you think we don't have submarines up there? You think the Navy's not all over this? That is true.
Yes, but they're not a surface-capable.
Yeah.
I suppose they would be, but, you know, to leave it to the private industry to go up there and provide an infrastructure for protection is ridiculous.
Okay.
And to think that the Chinese, Russians, and all the Arctic nations around the world are going to increase their ice-breaking capability while the Coast Guard in this country is so diversified and so spread out with such a low budget that they have a hard time keeping one smaller icebreaker running.
Yeah. Well, you know what one guy at the Coast Guard told me, I mean, high up in the Coast Guard, he says, well, you know, we're used to this. We never get enough money. We always have to still do the job no matter what money we get. It's true.
This is very true. They're very diversified, and if they have to cannibalize one cutter just to keep another one going, an icebreaker, that's appalling. So,
yeah.
You know, I would certainly like to see the Congress address this issue if they expect to have any jurisdiction at all over the Arctic.
All right. Thanks so much, Robert. Nick in Bethel, I'm sorry we didn't have time to get to you, but we're out of time. And next week on Talk of Alaska, yeah, of course, it's time to start taking on all the Sarah Palin books that are coming out. So we'll get a start next week. Yep, it's going to happen. Well, thanks so much to Josh Edge. Dave Waldron, I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BuzzBiz Studios, a full-spectrum media production studio with marketing services. BuzzBiz Studios help Alaskan businesses be seen and be heard in all advertising media. Additional information at buzzbiz.biz. November is National Family Caregivers and Alzheimer's Awareness Month. Are you one of the thousands of Alaskans who provide care for a family member who is chronically ill, elderly, or has a disability? Where there are resources and help for you and your loved one. For information, visit alaskaaging.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Aging and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.